Hello and welcome to episode 381 of the UK True Crime Podcast. I'm Adam. Today I cover one of the worst cases I can remember from the last 10 years from Hull. But before we start, I just want to remind you that you can watch the latest True Crime Podcasters Roundtable with the boys from Twisted Britain. Just search UK True Crime Live on YouTube. And I have a great competition this week for my supporters at patreon.com/UKTrueCrime. That's two criminology courses with Professor David Wilson worth £149. I'm giving them away for nothing. The draw is on Sunday the 24th of March, so please join us by then. I'm so delighted that this episode is sponsored by HelloFresh. Now, I've been a fan of HelloFresh for a long time, and I regularly order their delicious meals, as do my friends and family. Look, for me, and no doubt for you, life is super busy. And I love the convenience of HelloFresh providing all the fresh seasonal ingredients and step-by-step recipe cards to cook up delicious dinners. And they're delivered straight to your door anytime it suits you. And this month you can choose between premium recipes, childhood classics, Mother's Day recipes, along with family recipes, meals under 650 calories, and quick ones that take under 15 minutes to prepare. Ideal after a busy day, or if you're just desperate to start that new true crime documentary. I'm vegetarian, and there are lots of delicious dishes for me to choose from. Next week already, I'm looking forward to the pasta primavera with lemon sauce, bell pepper, zucchini and peas, and also the sweet potato and pepper quesadillas with southwest crema and tomato salsa. Just how good do those two sound? Especially with the fresh ingredients that you find in all HelloFresh dishes. I really can't wait. So visit HelloFresh.co.uk today and use my code UKTrueCrime to get 60% off your first box and 25% off your next 2 months. That's UKTrueCrime. For new and customers who cancelled at least 12 months ago, remember, use UKTrueCrime today. So let's set some context for our story with their Guess the Month and Year game. At number one in the UK charts was Ariana Grande with Seven Rings. Without Me from Halsey topped the US charts. And in Australia, the top album this month was the soundtrack from the Bohemian Rhapsody film by Queen, of course. In the news this month, same-sex marriage became legal in Austria, finally. The surviving R. Kelly docuseries investigating sexual abuse by R&B singer R. Kelly premiered. A light aircraft carrying Cardiff City's record signing, Emiliano Sala, disappeared near the Channel Islands en route to Wales. The wreckage of the plane and Sala's body was recovered in the following weeks. The pilot's body has never been found. The bakery chain Greggs launched a meat-free version of its sausage rolls. Very nice it is too. And in UK True Crime News, their Labour MP for Peterborough, Fiona Onesanya, was sentenced to 3 months in prison, having earlier been found guilty of perverting the course of justice for lying about who was driving her car when caught speeding. Her imprisonment made her the first sitting MP to be jailed in 28 years. So did you guess the month and year? It was January 2019. Today's story comes from Hull, a port city on the River Humber, around 60 miles east of the home of world football Leeds, and 200 miles north of London. On the 31st of January 2019, all the students were back at Hull University after the Christmas holidays. With no major exams in the coming weeks and having recovered from the busy Christmas period, the bars and the clubs of Hull were booming at the end of the week. 21-year-old Libby Squire, who was studying philosophy at Hull, had been out with her friends that evening as usual. They'd been drinking around one of their mates' houses before heading out on the town, but at the end of the night, the bouncers had not let her in their nightclub as they thought she was too tipsy. Nothing unusual here in any university town on any day of the week, so her friends did absolutely the right thing and made sure she got home safely. It was about 11:20 p.m. when two of Libby's housemates, who were out with her that night, Amelia and Chloe, put their friend into a taxi and paid the taxi driver the fare to take her home to their house on Wellesley Avenue, which was in the heart of the student district, about 10 minutes drive from the Welly nightclub. The taxi driver whose taxi the friends put Libby into is called Steve. He'd worked the taxis in Hull for 20 years, and on the Thursday night in question, he was parked opposite the Welly in the centre of town. Now, it was a place super popular with students, with the downstairs being general indie music, and upstairs was more emo. If you went to college, or even if you didn't, you will know the sort of place with lots of singing, dancing, and just generally having a good time. Steve spoke about that night, saying, "We would all line up and park outside the Welly, and that's when I came across Libby. I was approached by a girl asking if I could take her friend home. They gave me the address, gave me the fare, and asked me to make sure I got her home safe. She was pretty drunk, but I've taken girls home a lot worse than that. She was a bit angry about somebody, I don't know who it was. Thinking about it, it could have been the bouncer she was angry about for not letting her into the nightclub. I asked her if she was okay and she said, 'Yeah, I'm fine.' When she got out of the taxi, she was not falling all over the place. She staggered a little bit and held on to a bin and then got to the gate and I just got into my taxi. At 13 minutes past midnight, Amelia messaged Libby, asking her to let her know when she got home, but she didn't hear anything back, so thought Libby must have gone home and just passed out and gone to sleep. The other housemate, Chloe, messaged another of their flatmates, Erin, who had not gone out that evening, just to check if she'd heard Libby go home, to which she replied that she hadn't. Amelia and Chloe headed back home and thought they would find Libby wandering the street or with one of their neighbours, as this is where they'd seen Libby last time when she'd been separated. She was knocking on a neighbour's door. But however much they looked, there was no sign. Amelia drove around the streets near their home to see if they could find her. If you know the area, they drove around the student area of Hull, from Cromer Street up Beverly Road, then up Cottingham Road and onto Newland Avenue, where they stopped at a pizza place to see if Libby had been there. But there was still no sign. She texted Libby's mum, Lisa, to say what was happening and to see if she'd heard from Libby, but she hadn't. The housemates called the police at 2:21 a.m. When you are 21, you've been out for the evening. I'd suggest there are often explanations for why people have not turned up where they should be. I recall, as you maybe do, stumbling into groups of friends, parties, or other groups. And one of Libby's good friends at university, Nathan, he was not unduly worried when he received a call in the early hours of the morning from Amelia asking him to keep an eye out for Libby. He said, "I was not overly concerned as Libby is sensible and knows how to look after herself. Amelia called me at 2:30 a.m. telling me she'd called the police. But after this call, I was still not worried and thought there'd be a genuine reason why she'd not gone home. I went to bed, and the next day me and my friend were talking about how over the top the response had been. But then Libby didn't turn up to lectures at the university that day. Now Nathan did begin to become concerned, saying, Libby missing a lecture was very out of character, and as time went on, I worried more. The police in Hull immediately took Libby's disappearance seriously, and so they looked much more carefully into her background for any clues that could explain her disappearance. Libby grew up in the High Wycombe area of Buckinghamshire with her mum and dad, and she was the eldest of four children. At school, she made lots of friends, she always worked hard, and she was always very organised for her homework. She did well academically, and in 2014 for her GCSEs, she got 5 A star grades, 2 A's and a C. She decided to go to college to complete her A levels, but she began to struggle a little bit with her mental health, and this caused problems with her studying, which was reflected in her A-level results, which didn't reflect her ability, but she still managed 2 D grades and 1 U. This was still enough to go to university, and she chose Hull, as Libby really liked the city and also what the university had to offer. Her mum, Lisa, told how Libby had spoken about a possible career in journalism. "I was reluctant about her going away to university, but she was adamant," Lisa said. "She took a gap year before and travelled, going to Paris. She said she always wanted to go back there. She worked hard on her mental health and she was in a really good place when she went to university. And it looked like a great choice as she loved the academic life as well as socialising with the many new friends she made there. Lisa explained some more about how Libby enjoyed herself, saying, "She enjoyed nights out and drinking, but she was very much against drugs. I regularly collected her from parties and had to carry her into the house. She's previously damaged and lost mobile phones, so she got into the habit of not taking it out with her if she was going out drinking, and she didn't want to lose or damage it. Again, nothing unusual there." Lisa spoke some more about a childhood illness that had a major effect on her daughter, and how she later developed mental health issues. "As a child aged around 11, Libby suffered with glandular fever," she said. "It had an effect on her and she wasn't herself afterwards. She was always considerate of other people's feelings. Her friend suffered with an eating disorder at 13 and Libby wanted to support her friend. But she also began to suffer from a similar disorder. When she suffered with her mental health, she became depressed and a symptom was self-harm, which she began when she was 14. It was during this time our bond became stronger. She was always honest with me regarding her self-harm. I helped her dress her wounds and made sure she always had wipes and plasters. During this period, I always worried about her and feared that I would find her dead in her bedroom." Libby was referred to mental health services when she was 15, and with support, she was able to move forward with her life. Libby had a serious boyfriend, Connor, and they'd been in a relationship since the summer of 2016. "Libby is one of the kindest people I know," he said. "She would take other people's problems and try to make them better. She was popular, and you would struggle to find anyone that didn't like her. She was happy with me, and her friends said it was the happiest they'd seen her." Connor felt that Libby was thriving while living in Hull. "She really threw herself into her course and had more freedom and could do the things she wanted to do. She really thrived being away and it helped her self-confidence. The distance didn't affect our relationship. We spoke all the time and made the effort to keep seeing each other. She really enjoyed her course. The lecturers would say they'd never seen anyone with such a passion for learning." He told police on the night when Libby disappeared, he last heard from her shortly after 10 p.m. when they both told each other they loved each other and she seemed perfectly happy. Her friends told a similar story. Her housemate Amelia said, "We all got on so well together, but I would say I'm close to Libby as we study philosophy together. Libby didn't appear to have anything worrying her. I'd no reason to suspect there was anything wrong with her." Amelia revealed that Libby was in a great mood on the evening before she vanished. "Libby was really funny, laughing, and genuinely enjoying herself," Amelia said. Detectives appealed for help in finding Libby, and a number of local residents came forward, all with a similar story to tell. It seemed that once Libby had been dropped home by the taxi driver, she'd decided not to go into her house, but she'd walked off towards the busier Beverly Road. And she also seemed to be considerably under the influence of alcohol. One witness who lived on Wellesley Avenue as well said he and friends were waiting for a taxi to take them to the Willie of all places. "We had a taxi booked. At 11:30 I went outside and a taxi pulled up. The driver got out and I asked if the car was for us, but he said he was with her and he was helping a female out of the taxi. She was stumbling everywhere and struggling to stand. She began walking down the road towards Beverly Road and she walked about 30 metres when she slipped fully face down and laid there around 10 seconds and we laughed. We walked to her and asked her if she was okay. She said she was fine and walked away." Another witness saw her on Beverly Road just before midnight. She said, "I saw a girl at the bus stop near Haworth Street. She was lying on the floor crying and screaming. She was in a state. I was a bit scared at first, but crossed the road. She was flat out on the floor. I was stood at her feet. I didn't notice if she had any injuries, but she was talking to herself and slurring her words. I asked if she was alright and she replied that she just wanted to go home. She got herself up and sat on a little square wall and I watched her for around 5 minutes as I was concerned. But then she got up and walked towards the Ensley Centre, which is a B&B setting grounds. I started walking in the opposite direction and when I looked back, I lost sight of her. Many other passers-by also gave similar accounts and some tried to help Libby but she didn't want to be helped that evening. Police scoured the CCTV of the area where Libby was dropped home by the taxi and all the surrounding streets. They soon picked up Libby on the surveillance being dropped off at 11:29 p.m. at her home and then walking away from her house. She was certainly unsteady on her feet. Officers also noted one car, a silver Astra, being driven again and again around all the side streets near Libby's home. Then at one stage, the driver got out of the car. It was a man who then seemed to follow Libby as she walked into the grounds of the Enzi Centre, the place that the witness said was the last time she saw her. At 12:01 a.m, the footage shows Libby and the man leaving the Ensley Centre grounds after just 58 seconds there. They then walked together along Beverly Road to the bus stop where Libby could be seen swaying from side to side. The two then enter Hayworth Street where Libby could be seen getting into the man's car, although it's not clear whether this was voluntary or whether she was forced. The car was then captured on CCTV as it drove from Hayworth Street to Oak Road playing fields, where it arrived at 11 minutes past midnight. The car didn't stay for long and left shortly afterwards with the same man driving, but Libby was no longer in the passenger seat. A witness who lived near the playing field spoke to the police about what he'd heard that evening when woken at just past midnight. He said he'd heard screams, but as it was the centre of the student area, this wasn't unusual with young people often gathering there. So at first he ignored the screams. He said, "I could tell they were human. I could tell it was a female scream. The screams were enough to make me think, what could that be? It was not constant, it was intermittent. That's what stood out to me." When asked what the screams sounded like to him, he responded, "like desperation." Detectives by now were certain that Libby had been attacked and almost certainly killed in these playing fields by the man driving the silver Astra. And he was quickly traced to nearby Raglan Street, just minutes from where Libby lived. This man was married, father of two, 26-year-old Pavel Relovich. He left a small village in northern Poland with his wife, also 26, 5 years before, and they both worked for a meat producer plant in Moulton, North Yorkshire, about an hour's drive. One of seven brothers and sisters, he seemed to have few friends and seemed to spend most of his free time at a local gym in Hull or at home with his young children. But at 9 p.m. on the 6th of February, police officers swooped and arrested him on suspicion of abducting Libby. An hour later, he was being interviewed. He was told, "The purpose of this interview is to ask you some urgent questions. I'm now showing you a picture of Libby Squire. Is she alive?" He replied, "I don't know, how am I supposed to know?" He was asked, "Where is she now?" He replied, "I don't know, I didn't abduct her." The next day he was interviewed again and was asked, "Are you responsible for kidnapping Libby Squire?" He said no. He was told that she'd been reported missing and was last seen on February the 1st, 2019 on Hayworth Street. He was shown a map and said, "Look, there's a park there, right? That's the street where I parked, Hayworth, I think. I always park there when I start running. I start on Beverly Road and run through the university buildings into Newland Avenue and then I run back because I want to do some running to lose some weight." He continued, "I did my first warm-up. I sat a bit as it was -2 degrees. Did some stretching, got out of the car, then went into the pavement and I saw a lad in a baseball cap walking and talking on the phone and the girl was sitting and crying. Then the lad was talking on the phone and said, 'fucking bastard.' Those were the only words I understood. I crossed the road because I wanted to run. I walked past her and she said, 'Hey man, stop please, I need help.' And I said, 'What's up?' She said, 'I need to go home, I need my mother.' And she was crying. I didn't know if she'd taken something or someone had put something into her drink. She had shivers. I felt sorry for the girl. She was wearing a miniskirt and had a cut on her knee. She said, 'I don't know,' and she wanted her mum and didn't know what was happening to her. I said I had a car and could take her to her address. She was walking, but I would nearly walk onto the road and she gave me a hand and then she let go because I had the car. He then told police he saw a Citroen and in there sat three chaps. He thought the three men were Romanian and he said the girls sat and kept crying. He said, I put the heating on and left the door open in case and they were knocking on the window to her and they said something to her and they drove away in that car. She kept crying and sat there and saying she was cold. I was asking her, you remember the address, you need help. She was trying the handles of the cars to see if they were open. I was asking if she knew the address and she said yes. I said my car is here. If she's okay with it, I can give her a lift. She got inside the car and fastened the seatbelt. And I could see because the car was warm, she felt better. I was saying, give me the address, and I asked her left or right. And she said left, and I drove her a small distance. I said, give me the address, and she said here. And show me the street. You were right, I was saying. I asked her for the address and house number and she was showing me where to go. And it led to Oak Road playing fields. He told police the gates there were closed. He said, I have a dog and we always go there with my son. She began to be sick and I told her to get out and undid her seatbelt and she got out and walked. He said that she then walked away and that he hadn't seen her again. And the police could check the CCTV to understand his story. He said that he was then home at maybe 10 or 11 o'clock, which detectives knew was a lie. And when arrested, detectives found a number of other things about this man. They found he owned a pink holdall containing sex toys, female underwear, and photographs of women, all of which he'd stolen in burglaries. And disturbingly, his saliva and his semen were found on some of these items. In August 2019, he was sentenced to 5 years and 8 months for 4 offences of voyeurism, 3 counts of burglary, and 2 counts of outrage in public decency over a period from June 2017 to January 2019, all before Libby went missing. And next week, we will hear much more about Pavel Relovich and his offences, including how on one occasion he masturbated in front of 2 women on the street whilst looking directly at them, and how on another occasion he masturbated just a few metres away from 2 women and then followed them, ejaculating over the front door of their house. And we will also hear how he faced trial for the murder of Libby Squires. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the UK True Crime Podcast. To discuss this story and any other aspects of UK true crime, please head to Facebook and join over 94,000 of us who talk true crime 24/7. And to support the show, please do head to patreon.com/UKTrueCrime for 73 bonus episodes and loads of other exclusive content and the competition to win the criminology course hosted by Professor David Wilson worth £149. A huge thank you to the latest members of this community. That's Claire Bragg, John, Sarah Jones, Dave Thomas. Your support is so much appreciated. The latest full-length bonus episode is just out about murder on a submarine. Join today for under £2 a month. Cancel at any time. That's patreon.com/UKTrueCrime. Okay, so that's all from me, the host of the UK's 37th most popular true crime podcast, for another week. So until Tuesday and the conclusion of our story, please do take it easy. And remember, despite all the others, stay classy. Cheerio for now.